And a good Friday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by the good folks over at The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. We'll have more coming up from them a little bit later on in the program this morning. There was a pretty big story, a pretty big situation is probably a more accurate way to describe it, that unfolded last weekend in North Carolina. I've had it in my show prep all week, just have not had a chance to get to it. And finally this morning we will. And it's the story of a Democrat state representative out of Wake County who was in hot water this morning over a social media posting at one of the No King's Day protests that happened across the nation last weekend. Right, this whole No Kings thing, I guess I need to clap and give praise to those on the left this morning, because I guess they were successful, right? As I woke up this morning, Friday, June 20th, No Kings. So I guess in that aspect and in that element, they were very successful in their No Kings Day protests that took place all throughout the nation. So I guess we must bestow some level of gratitude amongst these individuals for the great work and the protection of our democracy that they took place in last weekend. So the individual in question this morning is Democrat Wake County Representative Julie Yvonne Haefen, H-A-E-F-E-N. She's a Wake County Democrat, and over the last couple of days, she has been under some pretty significant criticism after a social media post from one of those No Kings protests in Raleigh. Here was her post, which itself wasn't the commentary, wasn't all that controversial. It reads this: No Kings protest in Raleigh. Amazing turnout all across the triangle today, including this event at the Capitol hosted by the Wake Democrats and the NC Democrats. It was joined by a video that was posted on her Facebook page as she was walking through the crowd. And so here is a still shot from one of the protesters out at this event. This is a young woman, looks like in her mid, late 20s, early 30s, holding a sign that says, "In these difficult times, some cuts may be necessary." Pictured on that sign is a guillotine, which is used to decapitate individuals. It was used in medieval times to cut off the heads of those that were the enemy, right? Everybody knows what a guillotine is. It's not a new device by any stretch of the imagination. And affixed on either side of what looks like this broom pole or shower rod that she's using at this protest is a decapitated head of Elon Musk with a swastika on it. And then the other head is President Donald Trump. This is absolutely a sign that is calling for violence. You've got two severed heads on either side of a shower pole and a picture of a guillotine in the middle that says, "In these difficult times, some cuts may be necessary." This is violence. This is an attempt to stir up violence amongst the left. And it shouldn't be a surprise to you. The Democrat Party loves death and destruction. I mean, it's the largest thing that they partake in is constant death and destruction. They love it. They're fixated with it. So this image was posted on Representative Von Haven's Facebook account over the weekend on Saturday of last week after during the No Kings Day protest. And as you can imagine, it sparked some pretty significant outrage. It was originally reposted and brought to national attention by Libs of TikTok, the very popular X account. And the post now to this point has more than 11.5 million views. Now, there was some, I guess I'll call it, misunderstandings of the post. It is not the representative that is seen holding the sign. She is not the one holding the severed heads or the sign, but it's her video on her Facebook account. And it received, as you can imagine, some pretty significant attention, right? She is a lawmaker. She is a sworn, duly elected member of the North Carolina General Assembly who is posting this on her social media. And should that be a problem? Absolutely. And so over the last week, you've seen some commentary in the North Carolina General Assembly. House Speaker Destin Hall called the behavior disgraceful and noted that he was working with legislative attorneys to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again. In response, Von Haven posted this on her Facebook account Sunday, quote, "Yesterday, I posted a video on social media containing crowd photos from the No Kings protest in Raleigh. One of the images of a protester holding a sign was inappropriate, and I later edited the video to remove the photo," wrote Von Haven. "Let me be clear. I condemn political violence in all forms. My focus remains on bringing people together and fighting for the values that matter to North Carolinians. Like so many, I was horrified by the violence in Minnesota. There is no place for that kind of extremism in our democracy, no matter the target, no matter the party." And that's a very interesting post from her. Obviously, she's referring back to the horrific situation that unfolded last weekend in Minnesota, where a radical, unhinged, out-of-control Democrat killed a representative and her husband, injured others. And she says this, and I really want to kind of keen in on this, because words are important. The way that you describe something and what you say is, in fact, I believe, an important element. There's no kind of place for that kind of extremism as it relates to violence in our democracy, no matter the target, no matter the party. I don't believe that Representative Von Haven believes that. The Democrat Party, for a decade now, going back to when Trump came down the golden escalators 10 years ago, just like last week or 2 weeks ago, it was the 10-year anniversary of him coming down the golden escalators and making his announcement that he was running for president. Since that point, or very shortly thereafter, once he became a serious contender in the Republican primary process, Democrats, for years, in some cases over a decade, have been calling Donald Trump, the president currently, the 47th president of the United States, an existential threat to our democracy. That's a serious charge to levy against somebody. Now, you can say you dislike Donald Trump. You can even say you hate Donald Trump. That's fine. I mean, you're allowed to have that opinion. I'm not the thought police. I'm not the opinion police. I think you're allowed to express that and feel whatever way you'd like. But for when you spend the better part of 5 or 10 years talking about somebody being an existential threat to the country in which you live, to the democratic process that we have in America, I'm sorry, but I don't buy this gaslighting from Representative Von Haven or anybody else on the left when they say, "I was horrified by the violence in Minnesota. There's no place for that kind of extremism." I call BS. This is the kind of extremism that your party has whipped up and ginned up for in some cases, a decade now. Your party has been marching in the streets, has been posting on social media about Donald Trump and Republicans and the threat to America that that poses long term, calling it a threat to democracy. So how can you say that there's no place for that kind of extremism? You're whipping it up. You're encouraging it. These protests that took place last weekend to save us from a king, whatever the hell that means. I'm not exactly sure how showing up in downtown Wilmington, by the way, in the pouring rain last Saturday, to say that you're against kings makes any logical sense at all. President Donald Trump is not a king. He is an elected president. He is in the middle of serving a 4-year term. When that term is done, somebody else will come into power, whether that be another Republican or a Democrat. That's how our system works. We're not a democracy, we're a democratic republic, and that's how the system works. That's how the process works. This is not overly complicated. And in these protests all across the United States last weekend, you heard and saw similar comments and commentary from those on the left that use these events, use their megaphones that they've been given by the mainstream media and others to continue to push this narrative of Donald Trump and Republicans being a threat to the continued existence of America. I believe that's dangerous rhetoric. I do. Because when you say that over and over again, when you say that for years on end, the end result is that people go stir crazy. You see, and you saw last July, an individual attempt to assassinate President Donald Trump. You saw somebody climb up on the roof of a building in Butler, Pennsylvania, and if it wasn't for the president turning his head, he would have been shot live on national television and probably killed. That's the stakes that we're talking about. That's a real situation, not hyperbole, not a hypothetical situation that could unfold. That is a real situation that unfolded in Butler, Pennsylvania last year. And there is no question about it. The media and the Democrats, and which of course are one and the same, but their inability to lower the political temperature, their inability to ratchet down the rhetoric against Trump and Republicans absolutely leads to these situations unfolding. Are they solely responsible? No. Are they the reason that it happened? No, absolutely not. An individual made a decision, a very poor decision, and he's the one that's responsible. He was shot and killed by Secret Service, thankfully. But don't for one second not believe that the media outrage, these constant talks of threat to democracy this, king that, dictator that, authoritarian this, Nazi that, that all of these words, all of these phrases don't play a significant impact in the long term for individuals that might already be, oh, I don't know, a little mentally unstable. I mean, for you to think that you're going to climb on the roof of a, presidential nominee, former President Trump, climb on the roof of one of his rallies and attempt to assassinate him live on stage, you obviously have a couple of screws loose, right? There's no argument there whatsoever. But is the media complicit in some of these actions? And I think the answer is yes, absolutely. I think the media and their consistent discussion of this absolutely plays an impact. So again, I just have to kind of call nonsense from Wake County Representative Julia Von Hafen when she says, I'm horrified by violence and there's no place for that kind of extremism. You guys are the ones cheering this stuff on. You guys are the ones that have spent years talking about how Trump and the Republicans are a threat to North Carolina, a threat to abortion, a threat to women's rights, a threat to the rights of minorities and women, and so on and so forth. You've gone on and on and on about this, and you continually ratchet up the pressure day after day after day after day. And the end result is people feel that they are justified to walk around with signs like this that are calling for the decapitation, the murder of Elon Musk and Donald Trump. What else could this possibly mean? In these difficult times, some cuts may be necessary. A guillotine and two severed heads on the side of a shower rod. What else could that possibly mean? How else can you possibly justify that as anything but what it looks like at face value? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I've got the answer to that story this morning. I turn you over to the illustrious, the ever great Raleigh News and Observer, the NNO, one of the esteemed media publications in the state of North Carolina. If you are ever looking for the textbook example of left wing, just rabid left wing media, the News and Observer is the key definition of that. They spend all day, every day in not only their opinion section, but in their news section, spinning news to carry water for the Democrats and make the Republicans look evil. That's what they do. So this opinion piece ran over at the NNO yesterday morning. It was published while we were on the air yesterday morning. And it's about this situation with Representative Julie Von Hafen. And the headline is this: Please, NC Republicans, quit with the fake outrage over Democrats' post. Okay. I mean, it's a headline after all. I have a show title every day. You want to make your title a little bit, intriguing, maybe even a little bit salacious, because at the end of the day, we're in a click and view business. More clicks on websites mean more money, more views on channels, right? I mean, that's the society that we live in. I understand that. So the headline, of course, very intriguing. It's written by not just some random outsider, but by an individual by the name of Isaac Bailey, who is an employee of McClatchy Media, who owns the Raleigh News and Observer and the Charlotte Observer, and writes opinions in both North and South Carolina. So this is not some random person. This is not like your random person writing an op-ed for the newspaper. This is an employee of the News and Observer, an employee of the Charlotte Observer, and their larger subsidiary, McClatchy Media. So let's go through the story, because I think it's interesting. I think some of the points here are rather interesting. So Isaac writes the following. Oh, give me a break. Stop clutching your pearls. Your rank hypocrisy is showing. I'm referring to, of course, North Carolina Republicans drumming up phony outrage about an image that a North Carolina Democrat tweeted from the recent No Kings protest. Amazing turnout all across the triangle today, including this event. State Representative Julie Von Hafen tweeted about the protest. The tweet included a photo of a protester holding a cartoonish sign that included two heads on pikes. The sign read, "In these difficult times, some cuts may be necessary." So his first kind of description of this is to say that the sign is cartoonish. And I mean, I guess maybe we shouldn't really dissect this, but I think we should. Here's the sign, and I know it's a little bit blurry here. What's cartoonish about this? I mean, it's a picture of a guillotine with a very sharp-looking blade, and the blade in the upright position, ready to slide down the tracks and cut whatever's in its way. But see, this is the media's attempt to try and dispel the entire thing. Oh, it was a cartoonish representation of a guillotine. It wasn't like a real guillotine. It was just like a cartoon version. So that's the first attempt in this article to nullify and minimize what this sign is and what the overall presentation, which was this sign and two severed heads, what exactly that was supposed to mean. So let's go back to it. Isaac Bailey continues his commentary by saying, "Best I can tell, it was a reference to severe and deadly cuts to Medicaid and other safety net programs Republicans are likely to make law in the coming weeks, as well as suggesting the two heads representing beheadings. It reads to me as satire, a play on words, not a threat." So hold on a second here. Isaac Bailey sees the same photo that you and I just saw and says that in the best that he can tell, the sign was in reference to cuts to Medicaid and other safety programs. That wouldn't make sense in the context of this protest at all. These are the individuals attending the No Kings protest are radical progressives. The individuals attending these events are radical liberals. So why would they be saying that some cuts may be necessary as it relates to Medicaid and other entitlement programs that the federal government provides? The left is against those cuts. The left is all in favor of having no work requirement on Medicaid so you can sit at home and collect your Medicaid benefits by putting in absolutely no time at all to find a job or actually working as an able-bodied human being, right? So his synopsis here is completely inaccurate, and the reality is he knows that it's inaccurate. Let me just read this again. The sign at the protest, what you're looking at right now on your screen, sorry for you audio listeners, but I'll describe it again, is a picture of a guillotine, and it reads, "In these difficult times, some cuts may be necessary." On either side of this sign, there is a decapitated Elon Musk head with a swastika on the forehead, and on the other side, a figurine of Donald Trump's head. That's what's on this individual, this young woman's protest sign. He is equating that to this. best I can tell, it was in reference to severe and deadly cuts to Medicaid and other safety net programs Republicans are likely to make law in the coming weeks. It reads to me like a satire, a play on words, not a threat. You talk about being intellectually dishonest. That's what Isaac Bailey is. That's what the opinion section over at the Raleigh News and Observer is. It is intellectually, purposefully dishonest. No rational human being looks at that sign, looks at that protest and says, no, 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 it's probably not talking about decapitating the president and Elon Musk. It's probably about Medicaid and other safety net program cuts. There's nothing in that at all that mentions anything about healthcare, right? Medicaid, other programs. There's no reference to any of that in any way, shape, or form. But don't worry. Isaac Bailey knows exactly what's going on here. The sign didn't mention President Donald Trump, and neither did Von Haven in her tweet. These fake heads resemble Trump and billionaire Elon Musk. However, that's likely not coincident, but purposeful. So it is purposeful. So this was done in a manner to call for some level of violence. I would argue that putting somebody's head in a guillotine would equate to violence. That's what it would equate to? This whole piece is very confusing. In these two paragraphs back to back, the commentary doesn't make any sense. He notes, again, this is Isaac Bailey over at the News and Observer, the sign didn't mention President Donald Trump. You know what it also didn't mention? Medicaid or any other cuts from the federal government. The sign didn't say President Donald Trump, but it just happened to have a severed head right next to it. So Isaac Bailey can determine that this must have been done for Medicaid cuts, but then says, well, the sign didn't say Trump's name. Again, being intellectually dishonest with the discussion. It harkens back to 2017, early in Trump's first term, when comedian Kathy Griffin tried to shame Trump, creating a fake head of the new president covered with ketchup. That bloodied, in quotes, image was widely condemned. Griffin was investigated by federal authorities, and she couldn't fly for a few weeks, and she was fired by CNN. Oh, absolutely she was, because she made a complete jackass of herself. She decided to use her platform as a, at the time, an employee of CNN, and as a very funny comedian, right? Everybody closes their eyes and thinks of Kathy Griffin as the A-list celebrity stand-up comedian. Because she decided that her own opinion, her own political disdain for the president equated to her holding up this, and I'm not going to show the picture because it'll probably get flagged as violence on YouTube or X or one of these other platforms. But you remember the Kathy Griffin picture. I don't need to show it to you. You've seen it plenty of times. And when I go back to what I was mentioning earlier as it related to what the left has been doing for a decade, Kathy Griffin did this back in 2017. It's been 8 years since that took place. Before that, and continuing since then, you have had this continual ratcheting up of either commentary from the left or these satiric, these attempts. Oh, it's just satire. Don't worry about it at all. These attempts to show a dead president. These attempts to show a violent situation taking place against, at the time when Kathy Griffin did it, the 45th president of the United States, and now the 47th president of the United States. But these things don't happen in isolation. These things are not happening in a vacuum. They're not happening in an echo chamber. They're pretty widespread. They're pretty well established at this point. These things are not one-offs. They continually happen because the media is, I would argue, willing and wishing this stuff into existence. They continue to promote these kinds of narratives. So let's go back to the great News and Observer piece. Trump tweeted at the time, Kathy Griffin should be ashamed of herself. My children, especially my 11-year-old son, Baron, are having a hard time with this. Sick. Griffin was effectively blackballed. Her career stalled. Well, that shouldn't be a problem. I mean, I'm sure Isaac, Isaac Bailey, I'm sure he's a big fan of cancel culture, right? That's one of the big things that the left currently trades economies in is cancel culture, right? They find somebody that they disagree with and they attempt to destroy their lives, destroy their businesses, destroy their professional career, whatever it might be, right? The left does a constant transaction in cancel culture. So I don't know why the writer of this piece over at the News and Observer cares so much about Kathy Griffin being blackballed and her career stalling. I mean, you guys are the number one supporters of cancel culture. You are the number one supporters of life ruination. And of course, all of this at the hands of the Democrat Party. The piece goes on. North Carolina Republicans apparently want something similar to happen to Von Haven, even though she didn't create the image, only tweeted a photo of a protester holding the Two Pikes contraption. State conservatives are calling for Von Haven's resignation or that she be disciplined by the North Carolina General Assembly. Jason Simmons, the chairman of the North Carolina Republican Party, writes, quote, "The post Representative Von Haven shared does not show the judgment or the temperament of someone to hold public office. For the good of her constituents to have effective representation, she should resign." Now, this is back to the opinion piece. "I apologize if there's vomit on your screen if you're reading this online, or if the vomit is smudging the ink on the newspaper in your hand. I couldn't help it. I barfed at least 3 times while reading Simmons' statements. It's so disingenuous and odious." Wow. You threw up 3 times reading 2 sentences from the chairman of the Republican Party? This guy's an employee of McClatchy Media. This guy gets paid full-time as an opinion writer for the News and Observer, the Charlotte News and Observer, and a couple of other publications throughout North and South Carolina. And this is the kind of highbrow commentary that we're getting. This is the kind of insightful political analysis that the News and Observer is providing to its audience. I apologize if you're reading this and you're throwing up on yourself. This is the kind of commentary from the News and Observer. He threw up 3 times. I don't know if he means that literally or not. I mean, I'm taking his words for as he writes them. So in the span of 2 sentences, he threw up 3 times. Maybe he needs to go see like a GI doctor or something. I'd say that's pretty significant. If you can't read 2 sentences from the chairman of the Republican Party in North Carolina without throwing up on yourself. It sounds pretty terrible. Simmons is a high-ranking official of the party that made Mark Robinson the state's standard bearer and gubernatorial nominee. Now, Jason Simmons didn't make Mark Robinson the gubernatorial nominee. Jason Simmons is the chairman of the Republican Party. It was the voters of North Carolina that chose to make Mark Robinson their candidate, which of course ended up being one of the worst decisions that North Carolina Republicans have ever made. But I digress. So, because Jason Simmons, the head of the Republican Party, made a comment about these social media postings by Representative Von Haven, he's not allowed to have an opinion. Yes, that Mark Robinson, the one who said some folks need killing, and that's among the tamer things Robinson has done. Simmons is also a proud Trump supporter, a man who thought former Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi's husband getting attacked in their home by a deranged hammer-wielding man who also happened to be a Democrat was funny. And that's among the tamer things Trump has said or done. Everyone who voted for Trump or Robinson has forever forfeited the right to be outraged over what a political opponent says or does, no matter how silly or serious. Huh. Interesting. So because I voted for Donald Trump, I am no longer allowed to have an opinion on what any political opponent says or done? I can only assume that the author of this post voted for Kamala Harris. So does he forfeit his right? I'm sure he voted for Joe Biden as well, and I'm sure he voted for Hillary Clinton. So are his rights forfeited? No, just yours and mine. See, this is the game that the left plays. Democrats go out and do something. Representative Julie Von Haven tweets this and posts this ridiculous video on her X account of a woman talking about decapitating President Trump and Elon Musk. And now it's my fault. And now it's your fault as a conservative that that happened. Not her fault. Not the individuals like the George Soros group that funded these No Kings protests across the country. Not their fault. Not the mainstream media's fault, not the News and Observer's fault for whipping up and ginning up fear and fear-mongering for a decade now over President Trump and the Republicans. None of their fault, but it's my fault. It's your fault for having an opinion on it. Their support of such men prove positive that they don't much care about the political climate that is worsening by the minute. And who is worsening that political climate? Is it Donald Trump or is it the scumbags, the intellectually dishonest, morally bankrupt journalists like those at the News and Observer that call for violence, that call for the end of democracy if Republicans are elected? Who is currently making the political climate worse by the minute? It is unequivocally, without a doubt, Democrats that are responsible for that. Don't believe me? Go turn on CNN or MSNBC this morning. If you don't think that Democrats are solely responsible for the ongoing political climate that gets worse and worse every single day, then turn on the TV. Watch MSNBC or CNN. Go read some of the garbage coming out of the News and Observer and see who is truly responsible for the worsening political climate. It sure as hell isn't Donald Trump or Mark Robinson. It's the media. Their support for such men is proof positive that they don't much care about a political climate that is worsening by the minute. That they are in full support of our degrading politics just as long as they can use it for their own benefit. They don't care about decorum or decency, except when they can weaponize a superficial version of those supposed principles to gain or retain power. And he goes on, I've never condoned political violence and never will. I don't believe that for a second. I've spoken out against it when Republicans were targeted at a charity softball practice. Targeted. They were shot. Steve Scalise was almost killed. Listen to the framing of this. When Republicans were targeted at a charity softball practice, targeted. Steve Scalise came within probably minutes of losing his life, being shot and killed by a Bernie Sanders supporter at a congressional softball game practice. And it's phrased by, well, Republicans were targeted at a softball event. How about one of them was almost killed? Or when Nancy Pelosi's husband was attacked, and then after Trump was nearly killed, I even called out Griffin's stupid fake head gags. But sometimes I feel naive for not being as partisan as the North Carolina Republicans have been on this subject. I don't know if Von Haven meant the tweet to be read as a message about Trump. I know, though, that she deleted it and said that she would be more careful in the future. This kind of coronation, contradiction from Republicans never requires of Trump the man they worship or most others in their ranks who step across the line. So this is Isaac Bailey, a so-called journalist and so-called opinion writer over at the Raleigh News and Observer. You talk about a completely unhinged rambling. You will not find a better definition than this. So everything that's gone on, when you've got Democrats out in the streets calling for the death of the president of the United States, it's not their fault. It's your fault. It's my fault. It's Donald Trump's fault. Not their fault. And I wish I could say that I was shocked or surprised by this whole thing, but I'm really not, because this is par for the course from the left. They have no ability to accept responsibility for anything that they do. They never have, and as we continue to go forward, they never will. They're incapable of accepting responsibility. Anything that happens in America, according to those over at the News and Observer, is the fault of Republicans. Joe Biden completely bungles the economy, allows multiple wars to break out in the Middle East and throughout parts of Europe. It's Donald Trump's fault. Trump is almost shot and killed in Butler, Pennsylvania. Well, that's his fault for his political rhetoric that he's spinning up. I mean, this is the left. This is what they believe. This is what they think. They're mentally deranged. They're mentally ill. Seriously. And more than anything else, publications like the News and Observer that allow this kind of garbage to seep out into their website and printed on their papers are so intellectually dishonest, it's almost unfathomable. Change this story. Rewrite this entire story and substitute the word Republican with Democrat every single time. Just do that. And see if the opinion piece at the Raleigh News and Observer would be exactly the same. Just, I'm curious if just playing this out, I wonder if the flip side was the case. You totally flipped the coin over. And it was a Republican member of the General Assembly that had tweeted out an image at a protest that showed a severed head of Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. If this same opinion piece would be written over at the NNO, and except of calling out Republican hypocrisy, it would call out Democrat hypocrisy. I am pretty confident, and I think most of you know what the answer to that question is already, and the answer is no, it wouldn't exist. Because the media exists in a situation where they are nothing more than the next double standard. And that's it. They have a constant double standard that they promote 24/7, 365. Every single day of the week, no matter the issue, no matter the news outlet, no matter the situation that's being discussed, it is a constant double standard. It is constant hypocrisy from the left. And so when I was reading this post yesterday, by the way, I didn't want to make sure I'm clear with this. Unlike the author of this post, Isaac Bailey, I didn't throw up reading the post like he did. I mean, his words, not mine. That's what he said. I didn't throw up reading the post, but he obviously did. And so as I was reading this yesterday, I thought to myself, is this unexpected? Is this surprising? Is this something that I would expect to see? And no matter what way I tried to decipher this myself, figure out how to cover this on the show this morning, I came back to the same thing over and over again, and it was that I'm not surprised, because this is how the media operates. This is how the disingenuous, dishonest, morally bankrupt mainstream media operates. No matter the issue, no matter the debate, no matter the problem, it is Republicans' fault every single time. No matter what. They're protesters. They're Isaac Bailey's friends. He's obviously a flaming progressive radical. His friends are out in the streets holding up these signs, holding up these pictures, talking about the end of democracy this, the end of democracy that. And it's my fault somehow. It's your fault somehow. It's unbelievable that the News and Observer actually allowed this to get published. It's not unbelievable that it got written. It's not unbelievable that this was allowed to be at least cycled through the great halls of McClatchy Media. But I am a little bit surprised that the News and Observer actually published this piece, because there's nothing substantial in it whatsoever. There's no point that's made. The whole discussion is, well, Republicans voted for Trump, therefore they're not allowed to have an opinion. What are you, a four-year-old? That's how we're boiling down political debate in our country now? Well, if you voted for Trump, you're not allowed to have an opinion on this matter. So shut up, you idiot. Wow, that's great. It takes an incredible amount of experience, an incredible amount of journalistic integrity and intent to come up with that kind of decision and that kind of viewpoint. Isaac Bailey has obviously spent a long time in newsrooms to be able to make such a succinct point like that. You voted for Mark Robinson, therefore you're not allowed to have an opinion on anything that ever happens again. Very solid intellectual point there by Isaac Bailey. So that's what's going on over at the News and Observer this morning. I don't know what else to say. It's unfortunate that media outlets like the NNO exist in this form still to this day. Now, of course, they are, like many other media outlets, falling out of favor. Nobody would pay to read this kind of nonsense. Nobody in their right mind is scrolling through the opinion section of the News and Observer website and going, wow, that's a really damn good point being made there by Isaac Bailey. Nobody's doing that at all. I mean, these papers and these news outlets, whether it's MSNBC or CNN, continue to drop viewership, continue to lose audience, continue to lose trust. And it's not Donald Trump's fault. I hate to break it to you. It's not the Republicans' fault. I hate to break it to you. It's your own fault. This kind of commentary, these kinds of pieces of work allow the public and give them solid reason to say, you guys are nuts. We're no longer subscribing to your paper. We're no longer watching your news outlet. We're no longer listening to your radio station or watching your television show. You guys have opened the door for this stuff, and now, unfortunately, you're going to have to reap the benefits. Or in this case, not necessarily a benefit of losing half of your audience. But you're going to have to reap the results of it because you made the decision. Nobody forced you to. I don't think anybody forced Isaac Bailey to throw up all over his computer while reading two sentences from Jason Simmons. He chose to do that himself. So that was his choice. I didn't choose it. Donald Trump didn't choose him to do it. Mark Robinson didn't do it. And neither did the chairman of the North Carolina Republican Party. So that's some of the great news coming out of the News and Observer this morning. I don't know how North Carolina could possibly exist without this highbrow level of commentary from them. I've made sure I put Isaac Bailey on my radar so that we can keep an eye on more of his opinion pieces, because obviously what he's passing along is very important for the future of our state. We'll need to keep a very close eye on some of the things that he's talking about. So thanks, Isaac. Greatly appreciated. Phenomenal rundown and phenomenal analysis right there. Let me tell you about the law group here in Wilmington. When legal challenges arise, make sure you trust the law group right here in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating a real estate transaction, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. I've got great news for you. They're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or again online at their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. Appreciate the Law Group and their continued support here of the Nick Craig Show. Make sure you visit their website if you have any legal challenges across southeastern North Carolina, lawgroupnc.com. We'll grab a quick break on this Friday morning as we continue and roll on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on a Friday morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show on demand on your own time by checking out the Nick Craig Show podcast. If you would be so gracious to do so, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please give the show a 5-star rating, a 5-star review. It helps a lot with the algorithm and promotion of the show, so that is greatly appreciated. We've got some other interesting stories that we are tracking this morning. Of course, the big story of the week, we've been talking about it, has been the ongoing, for a week now, the ongoing war that is brewing between Israel and Iran. President Donald Trump, through his press secretary yesterday, saying, quote, this is Caroline Levitt, quote, I have a direct message from the president, and I quote, based on the fact that there's a substantial chance of negotiations that may or may not take place with Iran in the near future, I will make my decision whether or not to go within the next 2 weeks. Talking about getting involved in this conflict from a more offensive standpoint, where to this point it has been strictly defensive, with the United States providing air support and things of that nature for the country of Israel as they deal with the onslaught of Iranian missiles, which, by the way, have trickled down substantially over the last couple of days. The Israeli Air Force has completely garnered air superiority over the country of Iran, and every single time that they attempt a missile strike, there are less missiles than the last. And I can only imagine that within the next couple of days, really, that Iran won't have the ability to launch any additional armament towards Israel. I can't see how that situation is going to continue to unfold once they don't have the ability to launch any missiles. They're just sitting ducks at that point. And so the question about U.S. involvement continues to be a serious one, a very significant piece. And the question is, does the United States get involved with strategic strikes on an underground nuclear refinement facility that is in Iran, which from all reports is about 30 stories deep underground? Smart move again by the Iranians to bury that facility so that they it's not susceptible to traditional either ICBMs or other sorts of missiles that are dropped by planes or jets. This requires what is called the bunker buster bomb that the United States has, that has the ability to, before it explodes, go down into the ground, cement itself further into the ground, and then explode. And there is reports that the United States has the capability of actually doing that with this bunker buster bomb that they have. So the president saying that, again, to this point, still wants there to be negotiations that to take place, still wants to come to some sort of peace agreement with Iran. You know, here's the thing. They can still have a nuclear program. They just can't enrich it to make uranium that is strong enough and potent enough to put into a nuclear warhead. I mean, that's what many other countries throughout the Middle East have. They still have a nuclear program. They're just not refining it to make nuclear bombs. That's a situation that Iran could have. They've had 60 plus days now to negotiate this situation and have failed to do so. And I can only imagine, contrary to the Ayatollah's commentary on X, that they're running out of time and they're running out of options. And so the president, I guess, says within the next 2 weeks, I mean, that could be as early as today. It could be as soon as July 4th. That's 2 weeks from today. So that is what the president is saying through his press secretary. And then I've got another clip that I found incredibly disheartening from U.S. Senator Tom Tillis. Man, he just makes it very hard to try and put your broad support behind him when he is talking to CNN and makes this comment.
It's time for regime change. And I believe that this president should be given a fair amount of leeway to affect that.
Okay. So Tom Tillis is in Congress yesterday in the Senate telling CNN that it's time for regime change. I don't need to be the first one to tell you that when the United States attempts to or goes forward with the attempt for regime change, which we have seen all throughout the Middle East over the last 40 years, it very infrequently works out for the United States. We have a very strong military. We're very strong at defending. We're very strong at conquering. That is a fact. We are not very good at bringing in some sort of Western democracy to areas of the world that are really not interested in. And so Senator Tom Tillis calling for regime change is, I think, just incredibly stupid. I mean, it's just right up there with Lindsey Graham on the constant foaming at the mouth of more war, more death, more destruction, more U.S. servicemen and women being sent God knows wherever to get shot at and killed by foreigners. What the hell is he talking about? It's time for regime change, and I believe that the president should be given a fair amount of leeway to effect that. Is that what you want? I don't want the United States to take place in more regime change in the Middle East. Look at what has happened as a result of regime change in the Middle East. It's not worked. You can look at example after example going all the way back to the 1980s, 40 plus years. that the United States in various pieces have either directly or indirectly tried to affect regime change. How often does it work out in favor of the United States? The answer is not very often. Fear-mongering this and warmongering this situation, I don't think is a good policy platform for Tom Tillis. And once again, it is another situation that is putting him at odds with Republicans in North Carolina who are sick of the forever wars that people like Tillis have supported, that are sick of the forever wars that people like Lindsey Graham have supported. We're not in favor of that. And if you're going to actually have regime change in Iran, you're going to get yourself into another forever war. You are going to have boots on the ground, which I would gather is an incredibly unpopular stance among the vast majority of the American people. I think regardless of party lines, you would find that the vast majority of the American populace would not be in support of sending men and women over to Iran to effect regime change. I don't think that's a popular policy platform. I don't think that's a popular stance being put forward here by Senator Tillis in any way, shape, or form. It's time for regime change. I believe that the president should be given a fair amount of leeway to effect that. Man, does that sound like a good idea to you? It sounds like an awful idea to me. Israel seems to have this situation well under control at this point. They have been able to kill nearly every single top leader minus the head of the Ayatollah in Iran. A report that I read yesterday afternoon indicated that two-thirds of their missile launching capabilities have already been destroyed by the Israeli Air Force. Why would the United States want to get in there and effect regime change? What about our partners throughout the Middle East? Why don't they step in there? And if regime change is such an important issue, why don't they step in and do it? It's a bigger threat to them than it is to us. Now, I'm not saying it's no threat to us, but it sure as hell should be a bigger threat to, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, our greatest ally in the Middle East, Israel. Why don't they come together? Why doesn't Europe come together and say, okay, yeah, we need regime change in Iran? Why does it have to be Trump? Why does it have to be U.S. service men and women sacrificing their lives for regime change so Tom Tillis can decide that from his plushy office in Washington, D.C.? Not a good look for the senator. Not a good situation at all for him. He is going to be facing a primary in March. And man, if you would have asked me 3 or 4 months ago, is Tom Tillis going to be successful in the primary? I would have said, yeah, probably, most likely. But as things like this continue to come out, I think he is really putting himself in a very vulnerable position come March of next year. Seriously. So Trump says 2 weeks, negotiations can still happen. Senator Tillis says it's time for regime change, for another forever war in the Middle East. So I guess we'll keep an eye on that throughout the weekend, and we'll have any additional details as they are relevant right here on the Nick Craig Show. Well, that's going to do it for a Friday edition. Hopefully you enjoy another nice, warm, hot weekend across southeastern North Carolina. Appreciate the Law Group for their continued support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. We're back with you Monday morning right here on The Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble and X, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts.